the apothecary asked. You have driven away my business with your preachings. You have refused me the yew tree, my best source of healing. You have turned this village against me. You may have the yew tree, the parson said. I will preach sermons in your favor. I will send my parishioners to you for their every ailment. You may have anything you like, if you would only save my daughters. The apothecary was surprised. You would give up everything you believed in. If it would save my daughters, the parson said, I'd give up everything. Then, the apothecary said, shutting his door on the parson, there is nothing I can do to help you.
What?
Connor said. That very night, both of the parson's daughters died.
What?
Connor said again, the nightmare feeling taking hold of his guts. And that very night, I came walking.
Good,
Connor shouted. That stupid git deserves all the punishment he gets. I thought so too, said the monster. It was shortly after midnight that I tore the parson's home from its very foundations.
The rest of the second tale. Connor whirled round.
The parson?
Yes, said the monster. I flung his roof into the dell below and knocked down every wall of his house with my fists.
The parson's house was still before them, and Connor saw the yew tree next to it awaken into the monster and set ferociously on the parsonage. With the first blow to the roof, the front door flew open, and the parson and his wife fled in terror. The monster in the scene threw their roof after them, barely missing them as they ran.
What are you doing? Connor said. The whatever is the bad guy.
Is he? Asked the real monster behind him.
There was a crash as the second monster knocked down the parsonage's front wall.
Of course he is! Connor shouted. He refused to help heal the parson's daughters, and they died!
The parson refused to believe the apothecary could help, said the monster. When times were easy, the parson nearly destroyed the apothecary. But when the going grew tough, he was willing to throw aside every belief if it would save his daughters.
So? Connor said. So would anyone, so would everyone. What did you expect him to do?
I expected him to give the apothecary the yew tree when the apothecary first asked.
This stopped Connor. There were further crashes from the parsonage as another wall fell.
You'd have let yourself be killed.
I am far more than just one tree, the monster said. But yes, I would have let the yew tree be chopped down. It would have saved the parson's daughters and many, many others besides.
But it would have killed the tree and made him rich,
Connor yelled.
He was evil.
He was greedy and rude and bitter, but he was still a healer. The parson, though, what was he? He was nothing. Belief is half of all healing. Belief in the cure, belief in the future that awaits. And here was a man who lived on belief, but who sacrificed it at the first challenge, right when he needed it most. He believed selfishly and fearfully, and it took the lives of his daughters.
Connor grew angrier.
You said this was a story without tricks.
I said this was the story of a man punished for his selfishness. And so it is.
Seething, Connor looked again at the second monster destroying the parsonage. A giant monstrous leg knocked over a staircase with one kick. A giant monstrous arm swung back and demolished the walls to the parson's bedrooms.
Tell me, Connor O'Malley, the monster behind him asked, would you like to join in?
Join in?
Connor said, surprised. It is most satisfying, I assure you.
The monster stepped forward, joining its second self, and put a giant foot through a settee not unlike Connor's grandma's. The monster looked back at Connor, waiting.
What shall I destroy next?
It asked, stepping over to the second monster, and in a terrible blurring of the eyes, they merged together, making a single monster who was even bigger.
I await your command, boy, it said.
Connor could feel his breathing growing heavy again. His heart was racing, and that feverish feeling had come over him once more. He waited a long moment. Then he said, "Knock over the fireplace." The monster's fist immediately lashed out and struck the stone hearth from its foundations, the brick chimney tumbling down on top of it in a loud clatter. Connor's breath got heavier still, like he was the one doing the destroying. "Throw away their beds," he said. The monster picked up the beds from the two roofless bedrooms and flung them into the air, so hard they seemed to sail nearly to the horizon before crashing to the ground.
"Smash their furniture!" Connor shouted. "Smash everything!"
The monster stomped around the interior of the house, crushing every piece of furniture it could find with satisfying crashes and crunches.
"Tear the whole thing down!"
Connor roared, and the monster roared in return and pounded at the remaining walls, knocking them to the ground. Connor rushed in to help, picking up a fallen branch and smashing through the windows that hadn't already been broken. He was yelling as he did it, so loud he couldn't hear himself think, disappearing into the frenzy of destruction, just mindlessly smashing and smashing and smashing. The monster was right. It was very satisfying. Connor screamed until he was hoarse, smashed until his arms were sore, roared until he was nearly falling down with exhaustion. When he finally stopped, he found the monster watching him quietly from outside the wreckage. Connor panted and leaned on the branch to keep himself balanced.
"Now that," said the monster, "is how destruction is properly done."
And suddenly they were back in Connor's grandma's sitting room. Connor saw that he had destroyed almost every inch of it. Destruction. The settee was shattered into pieces beyond counting. Every wooden leg was broken, the upholstery ripped to shreds, hunks of stuffing strewn across the floor, along with the remains of the clock, flung from the wall and broken to almost unrecognizable bits. So too were the lamps, and both small tables that had sat at the ends of the settee, as well as the bookcase under the front window, every book of which was torn from cover to cover. Even the wallpaper had been ripped back in dirty, uneven strips. The only thing left standing was the display cabinet, though its glass doors were smashed and everything inside hurled to the floor. Connor stood there in shock. He looked down at his hands, which were covered in scratches and blood, his fingernails torn and ragged, aching from the labour.
"Oh my God,"
he whispered. He turned round to face the monster, which was no longer there.
"What did you do?"
he shouted into the suddenly too quiet emptiness. He could barely move his feet from all the destroyed rubbish on the floor. There was no way he could have done all this himself. No way. Was there?
"Oh my God," he said again. "Oh my God."
"Destruction is very satisfying,"
he heard, but it was like a voice on the breeze, almost not there at all. And then he heard his grandma's car pull into the driveway. There was nowhere to run, no time to even get out of the back door and go off on his own somehow, somewhere she'd never find him. But, he thought, not even his father would take him now, when he found out what he had done. They'd never allow a boy who could do all this to go and live in a house with a baby.
"Oh my God,"
Connor said again, his heart beating nearly out of his chest. His grandma put her key in the lock and opened the front door. In the split second after she came around the corner to the sitting room, still fiddling with her handbag, before she registered where Connor was or what had happened, he saw her face, how tired it was. No news on it, good or bad, just the same old night at the hospital with Connor's mum, the same old night that was wearing them both so thin. Then she looked up.
"What the—"
she said, stopping herself by reflex from saying "hell" in front of Connor. She froze, still holding her handbag in mid-air. Only her eyes moved, taking in the destruction of the sitting room in disbelief, almost refusing to see what was really there. Connor couldn't even hear her breathing. And then she looked at him, her mouth open, her eyes open wide too. She saw him standing there in the middle of it, his hands bloodied with his work. Her mouth closed, but it didn't close into its usual hard shape. It trembled and shook, as if she was fighting back tears, as if she could barely hold the rest of her face together. And then she groaned, deep in her chest, her mouth still closed. It was a sound so painful, Connor could barely keep himself from putting his hands over his ears. She made it again, and again, and then again, until it became a single sound, a single ongoing, horrible groan. Her handbag fell to the floor. She put her palms over her mouth, as if that was all that would hold back the horrible groaning, moaning, keening sound flooding out of her.
"Grandma?"
Connor said, his voice high and tight with terror. And then she screamed. She took away her hands, balling them into fists, opened her mouth wide, and screamed. Screamed so loudly, Connor did put his hands up to his ears. She wasn't looking at him. She wasn't looking at anything. Just screaming into the air. Connor had never been so frightened in all his life. It was like standing at the end of the world. Almost like being alive and awake in his nightmare. The screaming. The emptiness. Then she stepped into the room. She kicked forward through the rubbish, almost as if she didn't even see it. Connor backed away from her quickly, stumbling over the ruins of the settee. He kept a hand up to protect himself, expecting blows to land any moment. But she wasn't coming for him. She walked right past him, her face twisted in tears, the moaning spilling out of her again. She went to the display cabinet, the only thing remaining upright in the room. And she grabbed it by one side, and pulled on it hard once, twice, and a third time, sending it crashing to the floor with a final sounding crunch. She gave a last moan and leant forward to put her hands on her knees, her breath coming in ragged gasps. She didn't look at Connor, didn't look at him once as she stood back up and left the room, leaving her handbag where she'd dropped it, going straight up to her bedroom and quietly shutting the door. Connor stood there for a while, not knowing whether he should move or not. After what seemed like forever, he went into his grandma's kitchen to get some empty bin liners. He worked on the mess late into the night, but there was just too much of it. Dawn was breaking by the time he finally gave up. He climbed the stairs, not even bothering to wash off the dirt and dried blood. As he passed his grandma's room, he saw from the light under her door that she was still awake. He could hear her in there. Weeping. Invisible. Connor stood waiting in the schoolyard. He'd seen Lily earlier. She was with a group of girls who he knew didn't really like her, and who she didn't really like either. But there she was, standing silently with them while they chattered away. He found himself trying to catch her eye, but she never looked over at him, almost as if she could no longer see him. And so he waited by himself, leaning against a stone wall away from the other kids as they squealed and laughed and looked at their phones as if nothing in the world was wrong, as if nothing in the whole entire universe could ever happen to them. Then he saw them, Harry and Sully and Anton, walking towards him diagonally across the yard, Harry's eyes on him, unsmiling but alert, his cronies looking happy in anticipation. Here they came. Connor felt weak with relief. He'd only slept long enough that morning to have the nightmare, as if things hadn't been bad enough. There he'd been again, with the horror and the falling, with the terrible, terrible thing that happened at the end. He'd woken up screaming, to a day that hardly seemed any better. When he'd finally worked up the courage to go downstairs, his father was there in his grandma's kitchen, making breakfast. His grandma was nowhere to be seen. "Scrambled," his father asked, holding up the pan where the eggs were cooking. Connor nodded, even though he wasn't remotely hungry, and sat in a chair at the table. His father finished the eggs and put them on some buttered toast he'd also made, setting down two plates, one for Connor, one for himself. They sat and they ate. The silence grew so heavy, Connor started to have difficulty breathing.
"That's quite a mess you made," his father finally said.
Connor continued to eat, taking the smallest bites of egg possible.
"She called me this morning. Very, very early."
Connor took another microscopic bite. "Your mum's taken a turn, Con," his father said. Connor looked up quickly.
"Your grandma's gone to the hospital now to talk to the doctors," his father continued. "I'm going to drop you off at school."
"School?" Connor said. "I want to see mum." But his father was already shaking his head.
"It's no place for a kid right now. I'll drop you off at school and go to the hospital, but I'll pick you up right after and take you to her."
His father looked down at his plate.
"I'll pick you up sooner if I need to."
Connor set down his knife and fork. He didn't feel like eating anymore, or maybe ever again.
"Hey," his father said, "remember what I said about needing you to be brave? Well, now's the time you're going to have to do it, son."
He nodded towards the sitting room.
"I can see how much this is upsetting you."
He gave a sad smile, which quickly disappeared.
"So can your grandma."
"I didn't mean to," Connor said, his heart starting to thump. "I don't know what happened.
It's okay,"
his father said. Connor frowned.
"It's okay. Don't worry about it,"
his father said, going back to his breakfast.
"Worst things happen at sea."
"What does that mean?"
"It means we're going to pretend like it never happened," his father said firmly, "because other things are going on right now."
"Other things like mum?" His father sighed.
"Finish your breakfast. You're not even going to punish me. What would be the point, Con?"
his father said, shaking his head.
"What could possibly be the point?"
Connor hadn't heard a word of his lessons in school, but the teachers hadn't told him off for his inattentiveness, skipping over him when they asked questions of the class. Mrs. Marl didn't even make him hand in his life-writing homework, even though it was due that day. Connor hadn't written a single sentence. Not that it seemed to matter. His classmates kept their distance from him too, like he was giving off a bad smell. He tried to remember if he'd talked to any of them since he'd arrived this morning. He didn't think he had, which meant he hadn't actually spoken to anyone since his father that morning. How could something like that happen? But, finally, here was Harry, and that at least felt normal.
"Connor O'Malley,"
Harry said, stopping a pace away from him. Sully and Anton hung back, sniggering. Connor stood up from the wall, dropping his hands to his sides, preparing himself for wherever the punch might fall. Except it didn't. Harry just stood there. Sully and Anton stood there too, their smiles slowly shrinking.
"What are you waiting for?" Connor asked.
"Yeah,"
Sully said to Harry.
"What are you waiting for?" "It's him,"
Anton said. Harry didn't move, his eyes still firmly locked on Connor. Connor could only look back until it felt like there was nothing in the world except him and Harry. His palms were sweating. His heart was racing.
"Just do it," he thought,
and then realized he was saying it out loud.
"Just do it."
"Do what?" Harry said calmly.
"What on earth could you possibly want me to do, O'Malley?" "He wants you to beat him into the ground," Sully said. "He wants you to kick his ass," Anton said.
"Is that right?"
Harry asked, seeming genuinely curious.
"Is that really what you want?"
Connor said nothing, just stood there, fists clenched, waiting. And then the bell went, ringing loudly, and Miss Kwan began to cross the yard at that moment too, talking to another teacher, but eyeing the pupils around her, keeping a close watch in particular on Connor and Harry.
"I guess we'll never find out," Harry said, "what it is O'Malley wants."
Anton and Sully laughed, though it was clear they didn't get the joke, and all three started to make their way back inside. But Harry watched Connor as they left, never looking away from him, as he left Connor standing there alone, like he was completely invisible to the rest of the world. Yew trees.
"Hey there, darling,"
his mum said, pushing herself up a bit in her bed as Connor came through the door. He could see how much she struggled to do it.
"I'll be just out here,"
his grandma said, getting up from her seat and walking past without looking at him.
"I'm going to grab something from the vending machine, sport,"
his father said from the doorway.
"Do you want anything?"
"I want you to stop calling me sport," Connor said, not taking his eyes off his mother, who laughed.
"Back in a bit,"
his father said, and left him alone with her.
"Come here,"
she said, patting the bed beside her. He went over and sat down next to her, taking care not to disturb either the tube they had stuck in her arm, or the tube sending air down her nostrils, or the tube he knew occasionally got taped to her chest when the bright orange chemicals were pumped into her at her treatments.
"How's my Connor, then?"
she asked, reaching up a thin hand to brush his hair. He could see a yellow stain on her arm around where the tube went in, and little purple bruises all the way along the inside of her elbow. But she was smiling. It was tired, it was exhausted, but it was a smile.
"I know I must look a fright,"
she said.
"No, you don't,"
Connor said. She brushed his hair again with her fingers.
"I think I can forgive a kind lie." "Are you okay?"
Connor asked. And even though the question was in one sense completely ridiculous, she knew what he meant.
"Well, sweetheart,"
she said,
"a couple of different things they've tried haven't worked like they wanted them to, and they've not worked a lot sooner than they were hoping they wouldn't, if that makes any sense."
Connor shook his head.
"No, not to me either, really," she said.
He saw her smile get tighter, harder for her to hold. She took in a deep breath, and it ratcheted slightly as it went in, like there was something heavy in her chest.
"Things are going a little faster than I'd hoped, sweetheart,"
she said, and her voice was thick. Thick in a way that made Connor's stomach twist even harder. He was suddenly glad he hadn't eaten since breakfast.
"But,"
his mum said, voice still thick but smiling again,
"there's one more thing they're going to try. A medicine that's had some good results."
"Why didn't they try it before?" Connor asked.
"Remember all my treatments?"
she said.
"Losing my hair and all that throwing up."
"Of course."
"Well, this is something you take when that hasn't worked how they wanted it to,"
she said.
"It was always a possibility, but they were hoping not to have to use it at all."
She looked down.
"And they were hoping not to have to use it this soon."
"Does that mean it's too late?" Connor asked, setting the words free before he even knew what he was saying.
"No, Connor,"
she answered him, quickly.
"Don't think that. It's not too late. It's never too late."
"You sure?" She smiled again.
"I believe every word I say,"
she said, her voice a little stronger. Connor remembered what the monster had said. "Belief is half of healing." He still felt like he wasn't breathing, but the tension started to ebb a little, letting go of his stomach. His mum saw him relax a bit, and she started rubbing the skin on his arm.
"And here's something really interesting,"
she said, her voice sounding a bit more chipper.
"You remember that tree on the hill behind our house?"
Connor's eyes went wide.
"Well, if you can believe it,"
his mum continued, not noticing,
"this drug is actually made from yew trees."
"Yew trees?" Connor asked, his voice quiet.
"Yeah,"
his mum said.
"I read about it way back when this all started."
She coughed into her hand, then coughed again.
"I mean, I hoped it would never get this far, but it just seemed incredible that all that time we could see a yew tree from our own house, and that very tree could be the thing that healed me."
Connor's mind was whirling, so fast it almost made him dizzy.
The green things of this world are just wondrous, aren't they? His mother went on. We work so hard to get rid of them, when sometimes they're the very thing that saves us. Is it going to save you? Connor asked, barely able to even say it. His mum smiled again. I hope so, she said. I believe so.
Could it be? Connor went out into the hospital corridor, his thoughts racing. Medicine made from yew trees. Medicine that could properly heal. Medicine just like the apothecary refused to make for the parson. Though to be honest, Connor was still a little unclear about why it was the parson's house that got knocked down. Unless the monster was here for a reason. Unless it had come walking to heal Connor's mother. He hardly dared hope. He hardly dared think it. No. No, of course not. It couldn't be true. He was being stupid. The monster was a dream. That's all it was. A dream. But the leaves. And the berries. And the sapling growing in the floor. And the destruction of his grandma's sitting room. Connor felt suddenly light. Like he was somehow starting to float in the air. Could it be? Could it really be? He heard voices and looked down the corridor. His dad and his grandma were fighting. He couldn't hear what they were saying, but his grandma was pretty ferociously jabbing her finger towards his dad's chest.
Well, what do you want me to do?
His father said, loud enough to attract the attention of people passing in the corridor. Connor couldn't hear his grandma's response. But she came storming back down the corridor past Connor, still not looking at him, as she went into his mother's room. His father walked up shortly after, his shoulders slumped.
What's going on? Connor asked.
Your grandma's mad at me, his dad said, giving a quick smile. Nothing new there.
Why?
His father made a face.
I've got some bad news, Connor, he said. I have to fly back home tonight.
Tonight? Connor asked. Why?
The baby's sick.
Oh, Connor said. What's wrong with her?
Probably nothing serious, but Stephanie's gone a bit crazy and taken her to the hospital and wants me to come back right now.
And you're going?
I am, but I'm coming back, his father said, on Sunday after next, so it's not even 2 weeks. They've given me more time off work to come back and see you.
2 weeks, Connor said, almost to himself.
But that's okay, though. Mum's on this new medicine, which is going to make her better, so by the time you get back...
He stopped when he saw his father's face.
Why don't we go for a walk, son? His father asked.
There was a small park across from the hospital, with paths among the trees. As Connor and his father walked through it towards an empty bench, they kept passing patients in hospital gowns, walking with their families, or out on their own sneaking cigarettes. It made the park feel like an outdoor hospital room, or a place where ghosts went to have a break.
This is a talk, isn't it?
Connor said as they sat down. Everybody always wants to have a talk lately.
Connor, his father said, this new medicine your mum's taking, it's going to make her well,
Connor said firmly. His father paused for a moment.
No, Connor, he said. It probably isn't.
Yes, it is, Connor insisted. It's a last-ditch effort, son. I'm sorry, but things have moved too fast. It'll heal her. I know it will.
Connor, his father said. The other reason your grandma was mad at me was because she doesn't think me or your mum have been honest enough with you about what's really happening.
What does grandma know about it?
Connor's father put a hand on his shoulder.
Connor, your mum, she's going to be okay, Connor said, shaking it off and standing up. This new medicine is the secret. It's the whole reason why. I'm telling you, I know.
His father looked confused.
Reason for what? So you just go back to America, Connor carried on, and go back to your other family and we'll be fine here without you because this is going to work.
Connor, no, yes it is. It's going to work. Son, his father said, leaning forward, stories don't always have happy endings. This stopped him. Because they didn't, did they? That's one thing the monster had definitely taught him. Stories were wild, wild animals, and went off in directions you couldn't expect. His father was shaking his head. This is too much to ask of you. It is, I know it is. It's unfair and cruel and not how things should be. Connor didn't answer. I'll be back a week on Sunday, his father said. Just keep that in mind, okay? Connor blinked up into the sun. It really had been an incredibly warm October, like the summer was still fighting to stick around. How long will you stay? Connor finally asked. For as long as I can. And then you'll go back. I have to. I've got another family there, Connor finished. His father tried to reach out a hand again, but Connor was already heading back towards the hospital. Because no, it would work, it would. That was the whole reason the monster had come walking. It had to be. If the monster was real at all, then that had to be the reason. Connor looked at the clock on the front of the hospital as he went back inside. 8 more hours until 12:07. No tail. Can you heal her? Connor asked.
The yew is a healing tree, the monster said. It is the form I choose most to walk in.
Connor frowned. That's not really an answer. The monster just gave him that evil grin.
Connor's grandma had driven him back to her house when his mum had fallen asleep after not eating her dinner. His grandma still hadn't spoken to him about the destruction of her sitting room. She'd barely spoken to him at all. I'm going back, she said, as he got out of the car. Fix yourself something to eat. I know you can at least do that. Do you think Dad's at the airport by now? Connor asked. All his grandma did in response was sigh impatiently. He shut the door, and she drove away. After he'd gone inside, the clock, the cheap, battery-operated one in the kitchen, which was all they had now, had crept towards midnight without her returning or calling. He thought about calling her himself, but she'd already yelled at him once when her ringtone had woken up his mum. It didn't matter. In fact, it made it easier. He hadn't had to pretend to go to bed. He'd waited until the clock read 12:07. Then he went outside and said, Where are you? And the monster said, I am here. And stepped over his grandma's office shed in one easy motion.
Can you heal her? Connor asked again, more firmly. The monster looked down at him.
It is not up to me.
Why not? Connor asked. You tear down houses and rescue witches. You say every bit of you can heal if only people would use it.
If your mother can be healed, the monster said, then the yew tree will do it.
Connor crossed his arms. Is that a yes? Then the monster did something it hadn't done until now. It sat down. It placed its entire great weight on top of his grandma's office. Connor could hear the wood groan and saw the roof sag. His heart leapt in his throat. If he destroyed her office too, there's no telling what she'd do to him. Probably ship him off to prison, or worse, boarding school.
You still do not know why you called me, do you? The monster asked. You still do not know why I have come walking. It is not as if I do this every day, Connor O'Malley.
I didn't call you, Connor said. Unless it was in a dream or something. And even if I did, it was obviously for my mum.
Was it?
Well, why else? Connor said, his voice rising. It wasn't just to hear terrible stories that make no sense.
Are you forgetting your grandmother's sitting room?
Connor couldn't quite suppress a small smile.
As I thought, said the monster.
I'm being serious, Connor said.
So am I. But we are not yet ready for the third and final story. That will be soon. And after that, you will tell me your story, Connor O'Malley. You will tell me your truth.
The monster leaned forward.
And you know of what I speak.
The mist surrounded them again suddenly, and his grandma's garden faded away. The world changed to grey and emptiness, and Connor knew exactly where he was. Exactly what the world had changed into. He was inside the nightmare. This is what it felt like. This is what it looked like. The edges of the world crumbling away, and Connor holding on to her hands. Feeling them slip from his grasp. Feeling her fall.
No!
He cried out.
No! Not this!
The mist retreated, and he was back in his grandma's garden again, the monster still sitting on her office roof.
That's not my truth,
Connor said, his voice shaking.
That's just a nightmare.
Nevertheless, the monster said, standing, the roof beams of his grandma's office seeming to sigh with relief. That is what will happen after the third tale.
Great, Connor said. Another story when there are more important things going on.
Stories are important, the monster said. They can be more important than anything, if they carry the truth.
Life writing, Connor said, sourly, under his breath. The monster looked surprised.
Indeed, it said.
It turned to go, but glanced back at Connor.
Look for me soon.
I want to know what's going to happen with my mum,
Connor said. The monster paused.
Do you not know already?
You said you were a tree of healing, Connor said. Well, I need you to heal.
And so I shall, the monster said.
And with a gust of wind, it was gone. I no longer see you.
I want to go to the hospital too,
Connor said the next morning in the car with his grandma. I don't want to go to school today. His grandma just drove. It was quite possible she was never going to speak to him again.
How was she last night?
He asked. He'd waited up for a long time after the monster left, but had still fallen asleep before his grandma came back.
Much the same,
she said, tersely, keeping her eyes firmly on the road.
Is the new medicine helping?
She didn't answer this one for so long he thought she wasn't going to, and was on the verge of asking again when she said,
It's too soon to tell.
Connor let a few streets go by, then he asked,
When is she going to come home?
This one his grandma didn't answer, even though it was another half hour before they got to school. There was no hope of paying attention in lessons, which once again didn't matter, because none of the teachers asked him a question anyway. Neither did his classmates. By the time lunch break came around, he'd passed another morning not having said a word to anyone. He sat alone at the far edge of the dining hall, his food uneaten in front of him. The room was unbelievably loud, roaring with the sounds of his classmates and all their screaming and yelling and fighting and laughing. Connor did his best to ignore it. The monster would heal her. Of course it would. Why else would it have come? There was no other explanation. It had come walking as a tree of healing, the same tree that made the medicine for his mother, so why else?
Please,
Connor thought, as he stared at his still full lunch tray.
Please.
Two hands slapped down hard on either side of the tray from across the table, knocking Connor's orange juice into his lap. Connor stood up, though not quickly enough. His trousers were soaked in liquid, dripping down his legs.
O'Malley's wet himself!
Sully was already shouting, with Anton cracking up beside him.
Here!
Anton said, flicking some of the puddle from the table at Connor.
You missed some!
Harry stood between Anton and Sully, as ever, his arms crossed, staring. Connor stared back. Neither of them moved for so long that Sully and Anton quieted down. They started to look uncomfortable as the staring contest continued, wondering what Harry was going to do next. Connor wondered too.
I think I've worked you out, O'Malley,
Harry finally said.
I think I know what it is you're asking for.
You're going to get it now,
Sully said. He and Anton laughed, bumping fists. Connor couldn't see any teachers out of the corner of his eye, so he knew Harry had chosen a moment when they could bother him unseen. Connor was on his own. Harry stepped forward, still calmly.
"Here is the hardest hit of all, O'Malley," Harry said. "Here is the very worst thing I can do to you."
He held out his hand, as if asking for a handshake. He was asking for a handshake. Connor responded almost automatically, putting out his own hand and shaking Harry's before he even thought about what he was doing. They shook hands like two businessmen at the end of a meeting.
"Goodbye, O'Malley,"
Harry said, looking into Connor's eyes. "I no longer see you." Then he let go of Connor's hand, turned his back, and walked away. Anton and Sully looked even more confused, but after a second, they walked away too. None of them looked back at Connor. There was a huge digital clock on the wall of the dining hall, bought sometime in the 70s as the latest in technology and never replaced, even though it was older than Connor's mum. As Connor watched Harry walk away without looking back, walk away without doing anything, Harry moved past the digital clock. Lunch started at 11:55 and ended at 12:40. The clock currently read 12:06. Harry's words echoed in Connor's head.
"I no longer see you."
Harry kept walking away, keeping good on his promise. "I no longer see you." The clock ticked over to 12:07. "It is time for the third tale," the monster said from behind him. The Third Tale.
"There was once an invisible man," the monster continued, though Connor kept his eyes firmly on Harry, "who had grown tired of being unseen."
Connor set himself into a walk after Harry.
"It was not that he was actually invisible," the monster said, following Connor, the room volume dropping as they passed. "It was that people had become used to not seeing him."
"Hey,"
Connor called. Harry didn't turn round. Neither did Sully nor Anton, though they were still sniggering as Connor picked up his pace.
"And if no one sees you," the monster said, picking up its pace, too, "are you really there at all?"
"Hey!"
Connor called loudly. The dining hall had fallen silent now, as Connor and the monster moved faster after Harry. Harry, who had still not turned around. Connor reached him and grabbed him by the shoulder, twisting him round. Harry pretended to question what had happened, looking hard at Sully, acting like he was the one who'd done it. "Quit messing about," Harry said, and turned away again. Turned away from Connor.
"And then one day, the invisible man decided," the monster said, its voice ringing in Connor's ears, "I will make them see me."
"How?"
Connor asked, breathing heavily again, not turning back to see the monster standing there, not looking at the reaction of the room to the huge monster now in their midst, though he was aware of nervous murmurs and a strange anticipation in the air. "How did the man do it?" Connor could feel the monster close behind him, knew that it was kneeling, knew that it was putting its face up to his ear to whisper into it, to tell him the rest of the story.
"He called," it said, "for a monster."
And it reached a huge monstrous hand past Connor and knocked Harry flying across the floor. Trays clattered and people screamed as Harry tumbled past them. Anton and Sully looked aghast, first at Harry, then back at Connor. Their faces changed as they saw him. Connor took another step towards them, feeling the monster towering behind him. Anton and Sully turned and ran.
"What do you think you're playing at, O'Malley?"
Harry said, as he pulled himself up from the floor, holding his forehead where he'd hit it as he fell. He took his hand away, and a few people screamed as they saw blood. Connor kept moving forward, people scrambling to get out of his way. The monster came with him, matching him, step for step.
"You don't see me?"
Connor shouted as he came.
"You don't see me?" No, O'Malley,
Harry shouted back as he stood.
No, I don't. No one here does.
Connor stopped and looked around slowly. The whole room was watching them now, waiting to see what would happen. Except when Connor turned to face them. Then they looked away, like it was too embarrassing or painful to actually look at him directly. Only Lily held his eyes for longer than a second, her face anxious and hurt.
You think this scares me, O'Malley?
Harry said, touching the blood on his forehead.
You think I'm ever going to be afraid of you?
Connor said nothing, just started moving forward again. Harry took a step back.
Connor O'Malley,
he said, his voice growing poisonous now,
who everyone's sorry for because of his mum, who swans around school acting like he's so different, like no one knows his suffering.
Connor kept walking. He was almost there.
Connor O'Malley, who wants to be punished,
Harry said, still stepping back, his eyes on Connor's.
Connor O'Malley, who needs to be punished. And why is that, Connor O'Malley? What secrets do you hide that are so terrible?
You shut up, Connor said, and he heard the monster's voice say it with him.
Harry backed up another step until he was against a window. It felt like the whole school was holding its breath, waiting to see what Connor would do. He could hear a teacher or two calling from outside, finally noticing something was going on.
But do you know what I see when I look at you, O'Malley?
Harry said. Connor clenched his hands into fists. Harry leaned forward, his eyes flashing.
I see nothing, he said.
Without turning around, Connor asked the monster a question. What did you do to help the invisible man? And he felt the monster's voice again, like it was in his own head.
I made them see, it said.
Connor clenched his fists even tighter. Then the monster leapt forward to make Harry see.
Punishment. I don't even know what to say.
The headmistress made an exasperated sound and shook her head.
What can I possibly say to you, Connor?
Connor kept his eyes on the carpet, which was the colour of spilled wine. Miss Kwan was there too, sitting behind him, as if he might try to escape. He sensed, rather than saw, the headmistress lean forward. She was older than Miss Kwan, and somehow twice as scary.
You put him in hospital, Connor, she said. You broke his arm, his nose, and I'll bet his teeth are never going to look that pretty again. His parents are threatening to sue the school and file charges against you.
Connor looked up at that.
They were a little hysterical, Connor, Miss Kwan said behind him, and I don't blame them. I explained what's been going on, though, that he had been regularly bullying you and that your circumstances were special.
Connor winced at the word.
It was actually the bullying part that scared them off, Miss Kwan said, scorn in her voice. Doesn't look good to prospective universities these days, apparently, accusations of bullying.
But that's not the point,
the headmistress said, so loud she made both Connor and Miss Kwan jump.
I can't even make sense of what actually happened.
She looked at some papers on her desk. Reports from teachers and other students, Connor guessed.
I'm not even sure how one boy could have caused so much damage by himself.
Connor had felt what the monster was doing to Harry. Felt it in his own hands. When the monster gripped Harry's shirt, Connor felt the material against his own palms. When the monster struck a blow, Connor felt the sting of it in his own fist. When the monster held Harry's arm behind his back, Connor had felt Harry's muscles resisting. Resisting, but not winning. Because how could a boy beat a monster? He remembered all the screaming and running. He remembered the other kids fleeing to get teachers. He remembered the circle around him opening wider and wider as the monster told the story of all that he'd done for the invisible man.
Never invisible again,
the monster kept saying, as he pummeled Harry.
never invisible again.
There came a point when Harry stopped trying to fight back. When the blows from the monster were too strong, too many, too fast. When he began begging the monster to stop.
Never invisible again,
the monster said, finally letting up. Its huge branch-like fists curled tight as a clap of thunder. It turned to Connor.
But there are harder things than being invisible, it said.
And it vanished, leaving Connor standing alone over the shivering, bleeding Harry. Everyone in the dining hall was staring at Connor now. Everyone could see him, all eyes looking his way. There was silence in the room. Too much silence for so many kids. And for a moment, before the teachers broke it up, where had they been? Had the monster kept them from seeing? Or had it really been so short an amount of time? You could hear the wind rushing in an open window. A wind that dropped a few small, spiky leaves to the floor. Then there were adult hands on Connor, dragging him away.
What do you have to say for yourself?
The headmistress asked. Connor shrugged.
I'm going to need more than that, she said. You seriously hurt him.
It wasn't me, Connor mumbled.
What was that?
She said sharply.
It wasn't me,
Connor said more clearly.
It was the monster who did it.
The monster, the headmistress said.
I didn't even touch Harry.
The headmistress made a wedge shape with her fingertips and placed her elbows on her desk. She glanced at Miss Kwan.
An entire dining hall saw you hitting Harry, Connor,
Miss Kwan said.
They saw you knocking him down. They saw you pushing him over a table. They saw you banging his head against the floor.
Miss Kwan leaned forward.
They heard you yelling about being seen, about not being invisible anymore.
Connor flexed his hands slowly. They were sore again, just like after the destruction of his grandma's sitting room.
I can understand how angry you must be,
Miss Kwan said, her voice getting slightly softer.
I mean, we haven't even been able to reach any kind of parent or guardian for you.
My dad flew back to America, Connor said, and my grandma's started keeping her phone on silent so she won't wake up Mum.
He scratched the back of his hand.
Grandma will probably call you back, though.
The headmistress sat back heavily in her chair.
School rules dictate immediate exclusion, she said.
Connor felt his stomach sink, felt his whole body droop under a ton of extra weight. But then he realized it was drooping because the weight had been removed. Understanding flooded him. Relief did too, so powerful it almost made him cry, right there in the headmistress's office. He was going to be punished. It was finally going to happen. Everything was going to make sense again. She was going to exclude him. Punishment was coming. Thank God. Thank God. But how could I do that? The headmistress said. Connor froze.
How could I do that and still call myself a teacher? She said.
With all that you're going through. She frowned. With all that we know about Harry. She shook her head slightly.
There will come a day when we'll talk about this, Conroe O'Malley. And we will, believe me.
She started gathering the papers on her desk. But today is not that day. She gave him a last look. You have bigger things to think about. It took Connor a moment to realize it was over. That this was it. This was all he was going to get.
You're not punishing me, he said.
The headmistress gave him a grim smile. Almost kind. And then she said almost exactly the same thing his father had said.
What purpose could that possibly serve?
Miss Kwan walked him back to his lesson. The two pupils they passed in the corridor backed up against the wall to let him go by. His classroom fell silent when he opened the door, and no one, including the teacher, said a word as he made his way back to his desk. Lily, at the desk beside him, looked like she was going to say something, but she didn't. No one spoke to him for the rest of the day.
There are worse things than being invisible, the monster had said. And it was right. Connor was no longer invisible. They all saw him now. But he was further away than ever. A note. A few days passed. Then a few more. It was hard to tell exactly how many. They all seemed to be one big grey day to Connor. He'd get up in the morning and his grandma wouldn't talk to him. Not even about the phone call from the headmistress. He'd go to school and no one would talk to him there either. He'd visit his mum in hospital and she'd be too tired to talk to him. His dad would phone and he'd have nothing to say. There was no sign of the monster either, not since the attack on Harry, even though it was supposed to be time for Connor to tell a story in return. Every night, Connor waited. Every night, it didn't appear. Maybe because it knew Connor didn't know what story to tell, or that Connor did know, but would refuse. Eventually, Connor would fall asleep, and the nightmare would come. It came every time he slept now, and worse than before, if that was possible. He'd wake up shouting three or four times a night. Once so bad his grandma knocked on his door to see if he was all right. She didn't come in, though. The weekend arrived and was spent at the hospital, though his mum's new medicine was taking its time to work, and meanwhile she had developed an infection in her lungs. Her pain had got worse too, so she spent most of the time either asleep or not making a lot of sense because of the painkillers. Connor's grandma would send him out when she was like that, and he got so familiar with wandering around the hospital, he once correctly took a lost old woman to the X-ray department. Lily and her mum came to visit on the weekend too, but he made sure he spent the whole time they were there reading magazines in the gift shop. Then, somehow, he was back at school again. As incredible as it seemed, time kept moving forward for the rest of the world. The rest of the world that wasn't waiting. Mrs. Marl was handing back the life-writing homework. To everyone who had a life, anyway. Connor just sat at his desk, chin in hand, looking at the clock. It was still 2.5 hours until 12:07. Not that it would probably matter. He was beginning to think the monster was gone for good. Someone else who wouldn't talk to him then. "Hey," he heard, whispered in his general vicinity. Making fun of him, no doubt. Look at Connor O'Malley, just sitting there like a lump. What a freak. "Hey," he heard again, this time more insistent. He realized it was someone whispering to him. Lily was sitting across the aisle, where she'd sat throughout all the years they'd been in school together. She kept looking up at Mrs. Marl, but her fingers were slyly holding out a note. A note for Connor. "Take it," she whispered out of the side of her mouth, gesturing with the note. Connor looked to see if Mrs. Marl was watching, but she was too busy expressing mild disappointment that Sully's life had an awfully close resemblance to a particular insect-based superhero. Connor reached across the aisle and took the note. It was folded what seemed like a couple of hundred times, and getting it open was like untying a knot. He gave Lily an irritated look, but she was still pretending to watch the teacher. Connor flattened the note on his desk and read it. For all the folding, it was only 4 lines long. 4 lines, and the world went quiet. "I'm sorry for telling everyone about your mum," read the first line. "I miss being your friend," read the second. "Are you okay?" read the third. "I see you," read the fourth, with the I underlined about 100 times. He read it again, and again. He looked back over to Lily, who was busy receiving all kinds of praise from Mrs. Marl, but he could see that she was blushing furiously, and not just because of what Mrs. Marl was saying. Mrs. Marl moved on, passing lightly over Connor. When she was gone, Lily looked at him, looked him right in the eye. And she was right. She saw him. Really saw him. He had to swallow before he could speak. "Lily," he started to say,
but the door to the classroom opened, and the school secretary entered, beckoning to Mrs. Marl and whispering something to her.